It is Monday, December the 25th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, lots of reaction to new UN sanctions on North Korea.
This resolution ratchets up the pressure on North Korea even further, building on our last resolution, which included the strongest sanctions ever imposed on them.
I give our team a lot of credit for getting that done. They're pretty strong additional sanctions to be imposed against North Korea because of their continued testing of ballistic missiles.
Also ahead, Europe claiming success in tackling the migrant crisis, a Christmas message from President Trump to the troops, plus the sounds of the season. Hello everyone, I'm Steve Norman. North Korea's foreign ministry is calling the latest United Nations sanctions an act of war. UN Security Council unanimously agreed on Friday on a U.S. resolution to impose another round of sanctions on North Korea, targeting sectors that fuel its weapons programs. Nikki Haley is the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations.
On November 29th, Pyongyang launched an intercontinental ballistic missile. This was another attempt by the Kim regime to masquerade as a great power while their people starve and their soldiers defect. But for the international community, this is an unprecedented challenge from a defiant state. So we have leveled an unprecedented response. This resolution ratchets up the pressure on North Korea even further, building on our last resolution, which included the strongest sanctions ever imposed on them.
The new UN actions have won rare praise from President Trump and a leading Democrat not known for his kind words for the president. Maryland Senator Ben Cardin, the top Democrat on the Foreign Relations Committee, called the U.S.-sponsored resolution toughening sanctions a good move.
That was a major accomplishment. I give our team a lot of credit for getting that done. They're pretty strong additional sanctions to be imposed against North Korea because of their continued testing of ballistic missiles. So that is absolutely, it was a strong move forward. It was great to see China and Russia join us in that. It now needs to be followed up with diplomacy where we get China and the United States working with the same strategy with North Korea to find a way that we can ease the tension and get North Korea to change directions. So it was a good first step.
Previous UN sanctions on North Korea have failed to deter it from testing missiles and pursuing nuclear weapons. The U.S. also has rejected North Korea's offer to freeze its nuclear ambitions if the U.S. suspends military exercises on or near the Korean Peninsula. Meantime, South Korean President Moon Jae-in has asked the United States to consider delaying those joint military exercises until after it hosts the Winter Olympic Games in February as a way to ease tensions with North Korea. China and Russia also have called for freezing joint exercises while North Korea halts its testing. The South Korean leader said the offer will depend on how Pyongyang behaves. But U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said he was unaware of any plans to halt such exercises. South Korean proposal was made after the United States and Canada announced a summit in Vancouver on January 16th to seek consensus on a campaign to get North Korea to halt its nuclear-related activities. Tillerson joined Chrystia Freeland, Canada's foreign affairs minister, who made this announcement.
Canada and the United States are aligned with the rest of the world in our position that these provocative and illegal acts cannot be tolerated. We fully support regional and international efforts to address the North Korean threat and the work of the UN Security Council. We believe that a diplomatic solution to the crisis is essential and possible. In the spirit of working to achieve that and of maintaining pressure on the North Korean regime, I'm pleased to formally announce that the Secretary of State and I have agreed that on January 16th, Canada and the United States will co-host in Vancouver a meeting of foreign ministers from around the world in a demonstration of international solidarity against North Korea's dangerous and illegal actions. We will use this gathering as an opportunity to advance our work on diplomatic efforts towards a more peaceful, prosperous, and nuclear-free future on the Korean Peninsula, and to demonstrate international solidarity in our condemnation of North Korea's actions.
Nelson Wiseman, a political science professor and director of Canadian Studies Program at the University of Toronto, tells VOA's Victor Beatty a Canadian venue was seen as preferable to any location in the U.S.
Now, Canada and the U.S. have been discussing this for a while, even before the last missile launch by the North Koreans. So it isn't anything new, except Tillerson came up to flesh out some of the details of the meeting. In fact, we only found that it's going to be in Vancouver. Unless China and Russia are there, I'm not exactly sure what can happen.
Are they hopeful that North Korea will be somehow enticed to engage in dialogue?
This is a very weird formulation because it's not clear the United States wants to talk. Tillerson has indicated that they're ready to talk at any time. Then all of a sudden you've got the White House coming out saying, no, we can't talk unless the North Koreans stop anything that's provocative, any nuclear test or missile launch, for quite some time. And we've also had the President of the United States a few weeks ago saying, Rex, save your breath. There's no point talking. We're going to take care of it. So a large part of the problem the United States has here is, who do you believe? The State Department and the White House seem to be saying completely different things.
South Korea's President Moon Jae-in said he was willing to ease tensions ahead of next year's Winter Olympic Games in South Korea by curtailing joint military exercises. That's a first, as far as I know.
Well, that's exactly what the North Koreans and the Chinese and the Russians have proposed, but the United States has objected to that. But it's not at all clear, even if they did cease these military exercises, that this would lead to the North Koreans to respond the way the Americans and others would like.
Is this Vancouver meeting suggestive that Canada is going to take a higher profile role in trying to resolve this matter?
Well, one of the things that Canada has raised, which is sort of intriguing, is that the Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, has pointed out that Canada has relatively good relations with Cuba, unlike the United States. And the Cubans, in turn, have good relations with the North Koreans, and that Canada could actually perhaps be a conduit for back-channel talks through Canada, through Cuba, into North Korea. But I'm not sure that the Cubans have a lot of leverage with the North Koreans. It seems that the Chinese don't have that much leverage. And we've heard Vladimir Putin say that the North Koreans are, you know, are prepared to eat grass. They're not going to give up their program because of sanctions.
Nelson Wiseman of the University of Toronto speaking with my colleague, Victor Beatty. This is VOA.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. The number of migrants crossing the Mediterranean to Europe continues to fall, and the European Union says its policies to ease the crisis are working. But Amnesty International claims the EU's collaboration with Libyan groups involved in the detention of migrants makes it complicit in gross human rights abuses. Henry Ridgewell looks back on Europe's migrant crisis in the last year as the political fallout from the huge influx in previous years continues to be felt.
In 2017, Europe claimed success in slowing the arrival of migrants. On the so-called Central Mediterranean route from North Africa, arrivals were down by a third. But Amnesty International's Maria Serrano says this has come at a terrible human cost.
Europe has decided to cooperate with Libyan authorities, knowing the kind of torture, abuses, detention that migrants and refugees are exposed to in Libya.
In November, video emerged apparently showing migrants being sold at a slave market in Libya, prompting international outrage and calls for urgent action from the President of the European Council, Donald Tusk.
Let me repeat my call to impose UN sanctions on human smugglers and traffickers.
European countries are providing tens of millions of dollars and training to the Libyan Coast Guard and armed groups under the control of the Tripoli Unity government. That makes Europe complicit in the abuse, says Amnesty's Serrano.
They are sent to detention centres, official detention centres, and then militias and other armed groups and Libyan officials control these centres. So this is a source of money for them. Migrants are extorted, they are forced to call their families, and their families are listening to the awful abuses they suffer. So they receive beatings, they are tortured, women are raped.
The European Union has funded emergency repatriation flights to take migrants stranded in Libya back to their home countries. But there appears to be little political willingness to soften Europe's stance. EU leaders have trumpeted the falling migrant numbers as a way of countering anti-migrant populist forces, says political analyst Leopold Traugott of Open Europe.
The repercussions of the recent influx in 2016 and 2015 are still felt in most European countries. So until the EU decides and implements a new reform of its migration policies that is able to deliver sustainable solutions, the migrant crisis will still be an issue for European countries.
In 2015, Germany took in more than 1 million migrants. The backlash boosted support for the far right and cost Chancellor Angela Merkel votes at the September election. But supporters say her ultimate victory is proof that Germany and Europe can successfully integrate the migrants. Nevertheless, the European Union appears determined to close down the routes across the Mediterranean. Despite the risk of torture, abuse, and drowning, more than 160,000 migrants made the journey in 2017. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
White Zimbabwean farmer Rob Smart and his two sons have returned to their farm 6 months after they were forced out by police. That happened during ex-President Robert Mugabe's reign. Reuters' Matthew LaRotonda reports.
Their return marks the first sign that new President Emmerson Mnangagwa is keeping his vow to stop illegal land seizures and restore property rights. He'd heard of Smart's plight while still vice president and took up the case. Mnangagwa became president last month after a de facto coup ended 93-year-old Robert Mugabe's rule. Zimbabwe's economy had collapsed in the latter half of Mugabe's 37 years in power, particularly after the seizure of thousands of white-owned commercial farms. Land ownership is one of Zimbabwe's most sensitive political topics. The new government's now ordered illegal occupiers to vacate lands immediately, which could be a ray of hope for some white farmers hoping to return to their land.
That is Reuters' Matthew LaRotonda reporting. An Israeli court has freed without charges 3 men from Turkey who had been arrested on suspicion of assaulting police outside the Al-Aqsa Mosque, a Jerusalem holy site contested by Jews and Muslims. Police say they planned on taking part in a demonstration at the mosque. Nick Kaufman is the defense counsel.
The court rejected the police's argument, which was basically that they were liable to interfere with police investigation. And also that they pose a threat to the general community. It was obvious that this case was a politically charged case, the judge rightly released them. In fact, the police asked for an extension of the custody for the purpose of filing an appeal, and that request was rejected also.
The men were taken into custody, that is, as Israel confronted a weekly surge in protest against U.S. President Donald Trump's December 6th recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Still ahead, we'll hear from the President of the United States. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
If you're living with mental health conditions such as anxiety or depression, a study published in the British Medical Journal suggests singing with a vocal group or choir can help make you happier. Researchers from England's University of East Anglia say they found that those who participate in community singing were able to improve or at least maintain their mental health. They found that the combination of singing and socializing with a group of people can play an important role in recovering from anxiety and depression because it boosts feelings of belonging and well-being. The researchers spent 6 months interviewing and conducting focus groups with participants of the Sing Your Heart Project, a Norfolk County, England-based organization that provides group singing sessions and other social events. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. President Trump on Sunday offered season's greetings to the U.S. troops stationed around the world. He spoke briefly in a video hookup to members of the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, Marine Corps, and the Coast Guard, who are stationed in Qatar, Kuwait, and at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba, and to those patrolling the Strait of Hormuz in the Middle East.
I just wanted to wish everybody a very, very Merry Christmas. We say Christmas again very proudly. Very, very Merry Christmas. We're going to have a great year. It's going to be an incredible year. I'm thrilled to bring season's greetings on behalf of the First Lady and our entire family, and most importantly, on behalf of the American people. Today and every day, we're incredibly thankful for you and for your families. Your families have been tremendous. Always underappreciated, the military families, the greatest people on earth.
Speaking from his Florida estate, where he is spending the holidays with his family, the president also applauded the sacrifices the troops' families have made while their loved ones are away for the holidays. You know, music is a big part of celebrating the holiday season. There are those traditional songs that date back hundreds of years, and the more contemporary music from today's biggest stars. One of the most popular songs year after year was written just after World War II. It's all about a reindeer who didn't quite fit in. VOA's Jim Bertel has the story of Rudolph.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer is one of the most loved holiday songs in the U.S. and around the world. First recorded by Gene Autry in 1949, it has since been performed by hundreds of singers in many different languages. The song was written by composer Johnny Marks, who died in 1985. He is best known for his many Christmas songs, including Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree and Holly Jolly Christmas.
Have a holly jolly Christmas, and in case you didn't hear, oh by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas.
But Rudolph was his biggest hit. It was inspired by a poem by Robert May. Before his death, he took time to talk about his career. He said he didn't like his first try at the famous song.
Well, it'd be simpler if I just show you what I didn't like by playing it, because the original tune went, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Well, as I played it over, it just didn't sound like much of a tune to me, and I just didn't like it.
But then, a couple of years later, he started humming a tune on the street, one that would become very familiar.
Well, I think you recognize that, but you'll see it's the original tune in reverse, because the first one went, put it in reverse. At any rate, after I had that opening strain and I came across...
Mark's favorite part of the song is the opening verse because, as he says, it sets the whole picture for the song.
You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen, but do you recall the most famous reindeer of all? Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
The song has gone on to inspire a TV special and a feature film. And the song, like the reindeer, will go down in history. I'm Jim Bertel, VOA News.
you gotta love it. What a great little song, huh? Well, as we said earlier, some of the music of the holiday season dates back hundreds of years, and then there are those songs I like to think of as new Christmas classics, like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Now, a few more of those new Christmas classics.
Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. Prospero año y felicidad. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas from the bottom of my heart. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas from the bottom of my heart.
Music is a big part of the holiday tradition. And singer-songwriter Jose Feliciano's Feliz Navidad is one of the most popular new Christmas classics.
Aha! Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. Prospero año y felicidad.
At a point when his career had been sagging for some time, Feliciano wrote Feliz Navidad. That was in 1970, and even today it gets tens of thousands of downloads every Christmas.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing I need. I don't care about the presents underneath the Christmas tree. I just want you for my own. Make my wish come true. All I want for Christmas is you.
Then in 1994, singer Mariah Carey and composer Walter Afanasieff wrote All I Want for Christmas Is You, and the world had a new Christmas classic. Those who celebrate Christmas, almost all of them love the traditional songs such as Silent Night and Joy to the World. But they also embrace, in a major way, the new classics, one of which came from Bob Wells and Mel Torme, who in 1945 wrote what quickly became one of the most popular holiday songs of all times, simply titled The Christmas Song, sung here by Aaron Neville.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folk dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly.
Really beautiful song, huh? Originally made a super hit by Nat King Cole back in the 1940s. Many people have recorded it. And many people, just like you, have watched us and listened to us here at the Voice of America. We're grateful for this 2017 to spend with you. Thanks for listening to International Edition today. Latest world news is straight ahead. And for our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Daryl Smith, I'm Steve Dorman. We're all in Washington wishing you a great holiday. Now a bit more from Aaron Neville.
They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
December 25th is one of Christianity's most important holy days, a commemoration of the birth some 2,000 years ago of Jesus Christ, revered by Christians as the incarnate God, the Savior, the light of the world. His parents, Mary and Joseph, were among the poor, and tradition has it that Jesus was born into the cold of a stable in the darkest depths of winter. From time immemorial, people living in the Northern Hemisphere have celebrated the winter solstice, as the fading of the light gives way to the lengthening days and the promise of nature's renewal. Ancient peoples around the world welcomed the turn of the year and the pending reappearance of the sun with celebrations and elaborate rituals, some of which still echo in today's observances, including the emphasis on light. Celebrating the birth of Jesus near the time of the solstice capitalized on these ancient yearnings and midwinter observances, which still are present in other communities across the world. Around December 22nd, the Chinese and a number of East Asian people celebrate Dongji, a time for families to get together and remember the year just passed, as well as to celebrate the arrival of winter and the return of light. The ancient Yalda festival is a celebration of the winter solstice in Iran, while the Japanese observe Toji, a traditional practice centering around starting the new year with good health and good luck. The celebrations are varied, but everywhere the spirit of cheer and optimism prevails. For Christians, what echoes through the centuries is the announcement by an angel that first Christmas night of a birth and its promise, peace on earth, goodwill toward men. Each and every year at Christmas time, we recognize that the real spirit of Christmas is not what we have, it's about who we are. Each one of us is a child of God. That is a true source of joy this time of the year. That is what makes every Christmas merry, said President Donald Trump. We pray that our country will be a place where every child knows a home filled with love, a community rich with hope, and a nation blessed with faith.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.